So now we're on to motions with notice from elected members. The Mayor's brought forward an item in relation to Mitchell Park Sports and Community Centre project. If it's not obvious, I just want to explain that briefly by saying we're now getting into the end game in terms of the federal election process. Whether it's held in 2 months' time or 8 months' time, the major parties, at least, are starting to work out what they would like to fund. We are in a unique position in that there is really only one marginal federal seat in South Australia, and we're sitting right in the middle of it in Boothby. So obviously the Mayor would be expected to begin trying to obtain funds for some of our major projects, and I've started doing that, and obviously with a successful track record, if I may say so. But it's important with the Mitchell Park proposal, given that we made earnest efforts to get co-funding leading up to the state election and had absolutely no offering in the end, that there be a certain degree of flexibility. And what I am suggesting in this motion is basically to say, let's get out and try and get as much as we can in terms of promised funding towards it. At the moment, we have on the books a four-court indoor stadium plus neighbourhood centre and plus building upgrade and a few other things. But if the money comes back for a lesser proposal, let's be open to that and discuss it in council if there is such a proposition coming from either Labor or Liberal in particular. But there just needs to be that element of flexibility, because it would be a shame if, for example, someone came to council and said, look, we can offer you $5 million, it'll help you get a two-court, but you know, you're not going to get a four-court proposition. There needs to be the proposition, the capacity of the Mayor or managers for that matter to say, well, actually, we will think about that, rather than, well, no, that's not good enough. You see what I mean? This is just to allow a certain amount of flexibility in using best endeavours to get some extra funding. I'll take questions first, or motion, Councillor Crossland.
Two questions, Worship. The first one is that what will occur regarding this motion during the caretaker period?
Well, I think for the caretaker period itself, there's no harm in any of us talking to federal MPs or candidates, but obviously nothing binding can possibly happen. And that's understood by everybody, the external parties as well as all of us. But I don't think there's any rule that says, well, you can't, you know, talk to someone and say, how's your planning going for funding major projects in the community? So I think that's how it would work.
Okay, and that just brings me to the second one. Obviously, we're starting to sort of make strategic decisions or ongoing decisions which will affect the new council. Would the Mayor be prepared to put a point three in that just says this resolution will be reviewed in January 2019, so we're not holding the new council, bound the new council to any decision we make today?
Sure, I don't have a problem with that, that this... motion be reviewed in January 2019. I think that's no problem. I mean, it's the very nature of it. It's not really a binding sort of motion. It doesn't actually say anything has to happen, but it just allows, I think, a certain flexibility in negotiations.
Yeah, the reason for that is just it gives sort of a point where it's reviewed and all the details are provided to the new council, who probably will be comfortable anyway with it to continue, but at least it gives just a reset.
I haven't moved it yet, but I'll move it with that addition. Ms. McKenzie would like to advise.
Through the Chair, one thing just to remind Council is under the meeting regulations, once you move into a new Council term, you don't have to rescind previous motions. You can make a new resolution that would then sit over the top of the previous one. So it then does provide a little bit more flexibility to the new Council if they change their mind as well.
Thank you for that. Council Fifield was next.
Your Worship, have you... Has anyone moved?
It's not moved. I'll move the motion as printed with the paragraph 3.
OK, I'll happily second it then.
Councillor, thank you.
And in doing so, look, I'll say, and this is not just to staff, not just to elected members, but this endorsement isn't an endorsement for a conversation. It's an endorsement for probably about 100 conversations that need to happen. Like, this is almost a daily thing from now until whenever the federal election actually ends up occurring. I had close involvement with the Edwardstown Oval item, obviously, as did the Mayor, and the amount of conversations that occurred with the federal government in regard to that were immense. I can only imagine the amount of conversations that occurred in regard to Oaklands, which was an enormous, much bigger project in comparison. So I think let's just be realistic that we're not just endorsing the Mayor and the CEO to have this conversation. It's a strong encouragement to do so, and it's a strong encouragement to have many conversations in regard to this over the next couple of months.
Any other questions or opposition?
The other question about the... I'm not sure how much we can talk about it here. The alternative that was proposed earlier to the forecourts at Mitchell Park, and whether there's any information that can be...
I think all I can say on that is that there has been no news, and that no news is not good news.
Thank you.
Councillor Westwood.
Yes, it's sort of a query, but I would like this to be maybe taken on board and in the record somewhere, that the cost of the Mitchell Park project at one stage did bother me, and still does bother me in a way, and considering that the price of that is so much more than outdoor courts, etc., what I'd like to see in some kind of evidence or notes, unless I've missed it of course, is some kind of justification, which I'm sure the manufacturers of these courts would have somewhere, and that is a comparison of how much, or an analysis of how much money we might save in the community through injuries being avoided using a modern court as opposed to an outdoor court. And I just like that to be put in somewhere, if someone can try to take that on board, because to me, justifying spending so much money in a way on an indoor courts when you could probably do 5 times or more outdoor courts in that kind of sport, it does worry me a bit, and I'm sure it worries a lot of residents. So if that kind of thing could be looked at, why we should do it, and one of those is to save injury, and I suspect we'll probably save a lot of injuries in the long term.
Councillor, I don't know too many outdoor wooden floor basketball courts. Are you thinking of netball in particular?
No, any court, whatever the indoor courts can be used for, well, outdoor court would be a lot cheaper, I would think. So that's where I'm
perhaps
a bit worried about that.
Again, if we could ask staff to take that on notice about the safety benefits
and
of
it would just be woven
indoor
into
courts compared to outdoor courts.
Thank you.
Councillor Telfer.
Could the Mayor and CEO take on the issue of relative socio-economic disadvantage of children in Mitchell Park 0-4? This is material that I've received from the community development staff, and in the socio-economic disadvantage, the Mitchell Park group in our city is at the 10th percentile. We have a whole group of data now about physical, social, emotional, language and vulnerability of a particular group of people, And this group, which is not a large group, there are about 300 children, 0 to 4, in the Mitchell Park area identified, but particularly exactly south of the Mitchell Park Sports and Community Centre, we have 78 children that are in that whole most vulnerable range. Can this data be included as you go forward, because our neighbourhood centre is to be right there?
Thank you. That's valuable information. And if you could arrange for that to be emailed or provide a copy to myself and the Chief Executive, and we'll weave that into the message as we promote the project. Councillor Blescu. Yes, why not?
I think it's very important that we do look at the disadvantage in the area, and I think that as part of this project being built, that we actually facilitate the involvement of those most vulnerable in that area.
Point of order, Mr. Mayor. Is this in favour or against the motion? I just want to be clear.
Councillor Hull, I'm picking up that it's probably more relevant to Councillor Telfer's question than the motion itself. It is in favour. We've had a mover and a seconder, and you wanted to speak in favour as well, did you, Councillor?
Yes.
Can you be very brief about it, please?
Yes. So, but I also think we need to look at some of the other partners as well. Maybe they may not be able to contribute, but there are a lot of community organisations in that area that deal with the most vulnerable, places like Marion Life, that do a lot of good work in the community, that help the disadvantaged, that stick up for people, and are there without judgement to assist people. And I know that they've been working there for a long time, and I know that you know, there have been all sorts of projects they do with the financial education, so, but also tying in the needs and tying in some of those other partners to be able to strengthen the case to get that funding from that other level of government.
Is there anyone actually speaking against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. Carried unanimously. Thank you. On to the next page, preliminary options for Merino Hall and adjacent land, and I do note that staff have suggested an alternative motion. Over to you, Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Your Worship, and thank you for staff for assisting me in the new wording, as it was obvious that the original wording could have gone over into caretaker period. So the new motion is as printed, I believe, or going to be printed. So this is just to look at the Merino Hall. As members are aware, we recently purchased the land at 2 Bakewell Crescent. Since then, nothing has really been proposed or happened. I'd just like to make sure that the Merino Hall committee are the first people approached, and the lead in this project is taken by staff as opposed to other members in the community, and elected members get some say in what the decision will be in the future.
Councillor, there's some confusion about what your motion is. Is it not? It's not the alternative motion on page 205, or is it? Or is it something that's been emailed through?
It's been emailed through to staff.
Right. So that's the one that's on the screen. Just checking. If you have a look on the screen, Councillor. That's the one?
That's the one, yeah.
Very good. Right. Thank you for the clarification. Seconded, Councillor Byram. Anything to add? Don't have to?
No, I don't really have anything to add other than that it's a good investigation to have a look at where we go with it.
Anyone speaking against or questions? Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, during the state election, the member for Black indicated that he wanted to put money towards this hall, and as a consequence of him being elected, I guess he'll carry that out. So
it's $50,000.
Yeah. It's almost a parallel with Morphy Park Sports Club in terms of having this shiny new change room and nothing else around it of any much significance. I don't like this building. I think it's not a good example of what we can do as a community building. So the question is, can we put an embargo on that $50,000?
Oh, Councillor, I can say that informally that's already happened in a way, because the $50,000 I think was earmarked for the kitchen, but the community hall committee and Minister Spears have more or less agreed, well, it's silly to, you know, have a deluxe kitchen if council are then going to do something else with the rest of the hall. So it's in abeyance at the moment. The promise is good, but it's not going to be spent probably until this process is finished. That's the latest mail on that. Councillor Bilescu?
Is the report going to be provided in the future, going to put some recommendations for ongoing funding in the long-term financial plan? Because if community indicates that they want something, there is a demonstrated need and there is a requirement for funding, is that going to be in there so it doesn't come to the next council and there's no way of funding it? Is that going to be consideration included in the budget process?
If there's any proposal for capital expenditure that comes out of it, there would also be provision in the long-term financial plan, the maintenance, etc. So as a matter of course, that would be the case. But mind you, that's one step further down the track. First step is consult about possibilities. Then I think there's probably some groundwork to do before actually such a proposal, if it is to come forward, arriving on the desk here. All right, it's been moved and seconded. Anyone speaking against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. On page 206, this motion, again, coming from the Mayor, but it very much arises out of an informal gathering which we held openly and discussed the funding for community programs, in particular what's known as CHASP or CHSP. And the fact is that it's an Australia-wide problem. That we...
Point of order.
Yes, Councillor.
Mayor Hannah, I welcome your contribution. I'm going to support this, but if you're going to be speaking to the motion, the clock should be up there along with everybody else.
Oh, that's fine. I've never taken 3 minutes to introduce one of these, but I don't mind. Staff can do that. That's not a problem. But, all right, you don't want to hear what I've got to say. I've moved it. Anyone want to second it? Councillor Westwood? That's all right. Councillor Pfeiffer, any comment? Anyone speaking against? Thank you. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. It did follow our discussions earlier. On to page 207, non-recyclable plastics. Councillor Hutchinson is back for more.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, members, following our last meeting, I've obviously looked at what staff have provided us and come up with a more reasonable motion that I think we all agree with. It's just a bit of common sense, really, but it's just good to have it enshrined in a motion. So I look forward to your support this time around.
Is that seconded, Councillor Telfer? Any further to add? Then is there anyone speaking against the motion? Questions? I'll take questions, Councillor Hull, then Councillor Crossland.
Now, looking at point one of this motion, it doesn't lead me to believe that plastic bottles are an exclusion. The second part gives some insight that it might be. So I'd like to know whether we are excluding plastic bottles, because we recycle those just as easily as this one. And if that's the case, I'll support this.
The question's best addressed to the mover, Councillor Hutchinson.
Through the Chair, thank you, Your Worship. The motion is very explicit about non-recyclable plastics, so that's what we're talking about. So anything that's recyclable, let's make sure we are recycling it. Let's just live in a cleaner environment. So that's all it's about. It's not about anything else.
Question from Councillor Crossland.
Yeah, thank you to Councillor Hutchinson for bringing this back after receiving the comments from members. One of the questions that hasn't been answered, wasn't raised by myself, but it was certainly raised in the meeting, was can staff provide any potential cost to council in, number one, administering this motion or enforcing non-compliance?
Dixon.
Through the chair, with this revised motion, staff feel that it is achievable within existing resources and the budgets that we have. As we spoke at the last time this was discussed at a council meeting, many of the vendors that we use for our events are already equipped to meet this requirement as well.
So, we have a mover and a seconder. Question from Councillor Pryor.
You also have a question about I can understand that we have our people who we do who serve our food and stuff set up to deal with this. What about the covering of food? How does that factor in here? I mean, because it's not served on or in, but if we were to, I mean, let's say for example we have an event and we have a plate of food prepared 2 hours before the event, it's going to be covered with a single non-use plastic. Where does that fall in the agreement?
Through the chair, the way that I would read the first resolution is the sale or distribution of food and drinks, like served or on or in, covers that. So there may be food that's prepared and that is using single-use plastics, but this is about the items that the food is served in or on.
Thank you. That's good.
Is anyone speaking against? Councillor Appleby.
Thank you, Your Worship. Members, just because we can, I don't think it means we should. I think we need to resist the urge to control every aspect of people's lives, what they eat with, what they drink with. I think we should let them be. It just risks turning the city into a big nanny state. In many people's minds, it will only reinforce their view of council as being one of the most politically correct in Australia. And finally, I think we're just going to burn through more goodwill in the community for no tangible benefit. That's another big distraction, and this is the second meeting we've spent on it.
Well, to be fair, it is a different motion. Now, any other speakers in favour? Councillor Valescu?
Yeah, look, I'm getting a little bit tired of just hearing the rhetoric in regards to people wanting to reduce pollution and stick up for the environment. This isn't a nanny state measure. It's a small measure, very similar to what happens to a lot of events where they don't serve single-use plastics in a lot of the food. So we're just going that way. It's a measured step forward. And I don't think anything that doesn't, you know, create pollution should be viewed as some sort of political correctness. And I think politicising it is actually using that sort of rhetoric, it's turning it into a political issue. Most people want to live in a clean planet. Most people want to be respectful. And if some of those moves, you know, upset people, you know, that's we want to provide the best for the whole community, and this is just one small step forward. If we were being Puritans about this, there would have been huge restrictions, and this isn't a huge restriction. And getting back to the providers, they said it's not going to be an issue, it's not going to be disruptive. The other option was disruptive, and council rightfully opposed that.
Any others against the motion? Just make sure no one else against. All right, a question from Councillor Hull.
Just in debate, there was suggestion that this will be imposed on families in our city. This is an internal measure. It's only for council. It's not as we're not going to impose this on households or businesses at this point. This is about the council's operation, council events.
So I'll ask Ms. Dixon to clarify, and of course Councillor Hutchinson can address that in his reply later.
Through the chair, that is correct. It's council events.
I have a question on that.
Well, you have spoken, Councillor Appleby. No, but you've already spoken, to be fair. Well, I think that's a yes to that, but...
Through the chair, so if we are engaging vendors to distribute, provide food, so at Concert at the Cove, that will be part of the contract that we engage those vendors in.
I'm starting to become tired and lax in chairing the meeting. Better move straight on to Councillor Hutchinson to close the debate.
Thank you, Worship. Members, I didn't want to make a meal of it, excuse the pun. but really it's just about procurement best practice. That's all I'm looking for here. It's not about controlling people's lives or ramming left-wing ideology down their throats. It's not about that at all. It's just about some common sense practice that we can implement in our council. You know, time and time again, you see major events where there's rubbish strewn everywhere, there's products that aren't able to be recycled, and we're just adding to our problems there. So not necessarily all of our events, but in general when there's outdoor events. Also, I think it will actually enhance our reputation if we do some of these things. More and more there's a trend in the coffee drinking industry that you have a reusable cup now. That's up for debate and I'm not going to go there, but there are recyclable cups in that industry and that's picking up and it's gaining traction. So look, there's a lot of good things we can do. It's just about making the most of our resources that we've got, and it makes economic sense. And Councillor Pryor was really keen on wanting to save the turtles, so I just needed to add that in at the end.
All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, carried by majority. Division is called. All those in favour, please stand in your place, and they would be councillors Pfeiffer, Telfer, Hutchinson, Pryor, Hull, Westwood, Byram, Velescu and Crossland. You may sit down. Those against, Councillor Appleby. The motion is affirmed. Councillor Crossland, you've got your hand up.
Just a quick question for your worship. I wasn't here for the moving of the minutes, and before we go to questions and close the meeting, I did pick up an error in the minutes, and I don't know if anyone else did in my absence.
We've got it. Ms. McKenzie's read your mind. Hopefully it's the same error.
Was it Councillor Kerry voting twice?
Right. Yep, brilliant. One step ahead. That's what we like to see. Questions with notice. So on page 208, staff have answered Councillor Appleby's question about public access to contractual information, etc. The FOI legislation is probably a good place to start with that. The External Funding Committee of Council. The Mayor's asked a question to clarify that. On page 212, Councillor Crossland's asked about the decision to close the nursery, but we need more time to respond. Staff are working on that. Now, just checking, that will automatically just go onto the agenda for next time, right? Question on page 213, USA court ruling regarding the use of herbicides from Councillor Velescu. Of course, that was a case where a farmer, I think, had contracted cancer and had successfully blamed that on Roundup, the Bio-Monsanto product. Happens to be one that we use, or something like it, and there's an extensive answer given there by staff. Having dealt with questions, we now go back, members. We've got half an hour, I'm glad to say, to go back to page 136. Let's work through these policies one by one. What I would suggest is suspension of standing orders, and then if we just we get as far as we can in the discussion, and then we'll vote on the policies that we've been through in about half an hour's time. So Councillor Westwood is moving to suspend standing orders. Is that seconded by Councillor Byram? Thank you. All those in favour? Unanimous. Thank you. So we start with, I've asked Ms. McKenzie, she's happy for us to just work through them one by one. I draw your attention to the page 138, the road and public place names policy. I thought this was an important one to discuss, since a number of councils had very strong views about the naming of streets in the Tonsley area. I was very much in favour of names associated with historical
usage by Mitsubishi and Chrysler and so on, whether it be Charger Street or whatever. I know Councillor Hutchinson's attracted to the nomenclature from the motor racing world. But that's just one example. I must say, many years ago, when I was in council in the 1990s, I asked a question when there were a whole group of streets, I think somewhere in Mitchell Park, that were named after girls' names, you know, I forget what it was, but Kylie Street, Mary Avenue, something else. And I thought, well, where does that come from? I mean, it's quite a public concern about what street names are, and yet it just seems to be whatever the developer put down on the paper, whether it's their grandchildren or something, that's what it gets known as. So, it's open to you, councillors. Do you want to influence that process at all in terms of this policy? Councillor Telfer, any comments?
I wanted to interrogate the whole idea that you couldn't have living persons. That was listed in 3.2.2, I think, or 3.2.3. Names of living persons will be avoided. I don't feel strongly about that. I think if somebody is a prominent person and they've proved their worth, yes, there may be something that happens that changes things or the viewpoint down the track, but we do have some of our infrastructure throughout the city named after living persons. We have the Graham Watts Playground at Cosgrove Hall. So I don't feel comfortable with that. It seems to me a convenient one, maybe, rather than being a necessary one.
All right. When in doubt, take it out. Any other ideas, Councillor Appleby?
Just following up on that, I think that in terms of the naming, particularly of reserves, it should be consistent. So if we're going to name it after someone, I think it should be surname only, because at the moment we've got some with full names, Christian names, and some without. So I think it needs to be consistent.
It should
be shorter rather than
I do get annoyed by Sir Donald Bradman Drive, and I still call it Burbridge Road quite deliberately. No one else knows what I'm talking about, of course. But, you know, why not Bradman Drive? I mean, everyone knows who that's referring to, but does it really need, and, you know, the Mike Turter Bikeway? Why can't it just be the Turter Bikeway? But yeah, well, there you go. I'm not completely wrong all the time. But is there scope, councillor, to include that somewhere?
I didn't really see it mentioned in there, but I'm sure it could be included as a point.
I ask staff, how could we include that? And we leave staff to redraft it.
It could be part of 3.2.3 propriety, which has got that comments about lack of offensiveness and commercial and so on, so I think it would fit in that section.
Yes. So streets, it's really streets named after people should generally use the last name, the surname only.
Everything. So more, it's more to do with public reserves.
Well, this actually, this is public place names as well. So, it does it specifically. Public place means a place to which the public has access. So I guess it is playgrounds, isn't it?
That's already in
3.2.4. Thank you, Mr. Waits. Perfect. It's already in there, Councillor. You hit the jackpot there. So we don't need to take action on that. Councillor Hutchinson, then Councillor Hull.
Thank you, Worship. On page 139, 3.2.1, there's continuing references to the old Department of Transport. It would be nice to make sure we're up to date at the moment.
Two things on this. I have a well-known, long-standing concern about our lack of creativity with reserve names by simply naming the reserve after the street that adjoins it is not that creative. We have Reserve Avenue Reserve, for God's sake. I just find that too simplistic.
Can agree with you, it's not creative, but it's certainly very informative. What do others think? With suspended orders, so let's just do straw poll.
One other item.
Yeah, sure, I'll come back to you, Councillor, but who agrees that we should, well, put the conservative proposition, who says we should continue to generally name reserves after the adjacent street? So I think you probably haven't really got support on that one, Councillor Hull. Hang on, Councillor Westwood, I'll come back to you next. Councillor Hull, you had another one.
The other is, and it sort of follows on from Councillor Telfer's contribution, a word of caution about naming reserves or streets after living people, and councils have a long, proud history of naming reserves after their councillors. Now, West Torrens went through this big time. There's Rhys Jennings Bike Way, there's the wards at nursing homes named after councillors. I have a degree of caution about that becoming a routine, habitual approach. Now, there's a bit of irony in that because next week we're going to rename a reserve after a former councillor. I'd like to see some criteria and selection criteria for that to be the case, if it was to be the case, if you know what I mean. I'd hate to see it become out of control.
We've already got a retired councillor reserve as well, in terms of Graham Watts, haven't we?
Yeah, so I wouldn't like to see it become a rampant habit.
I think let's just take it on a case-by-case basis. Usually with reserves and playgrounds, at least it comes to council, and so you're going to get a say. With roads, it's a bit different because it's sort of stuck under your nose and you're meant to agree with it. So let's just take that one on board, and there's no sign of it becoming rampant, but let's keep a watch on it. Councillor Westwood was next.
Yes, it was a follow-on from an earlier comment about the reserve street reserve. I think that we should name the reserves after their neighbouring street where it's considered appropriate, except if the street is named after the reserve and it's a circular naming, if I can put it that way.
Well, I think that's the only example, really, isn't it?
Sorry?
It's probably the only example.
Yeah, well, I don't think we should continue with that. Okay.
No.
If you think it's beyond silly, I'm happy to leave it. Thanks.
It's not pretty, but I think if we stick to the rule that, you know, generally we're naming reserves after an adjacent street, if we had another reserve, I don't know what you call it, I think the likelihood of it coming up again is pretty minimal, to be honest. Councillor Pryor? I remember the Vinyl Street controversy, and it was more than annoying for residents. There were cases where ambulances went to the wrong end of the street, and there's a dead end in the middle. Have we got something in there, Ms. McKenzie, about when a street is not continuous to traffic, that each part of the street should be separately named? Well, let's put that in there as a preference, at least. Just next time we do a roadblock or something.
It's really that where a street is not continuous to traffic, then the separate parts of the street should be separately named. I mean, that can be tightened up a bit. You get the idea.
Yeah, it's more that...
Sorry. Well, this policy is more about the new naming process, but it would be, and it has happened before, that residents could come to council or a councillor could come to council and say, I move that Vinyl Street that part of Vinyl Street be renamed Vinyl Street West. You know, that sort of thing can be done, but is it fair to say, Ms. McKenzie, that's outside this policy? Or
I believe it's in the legislation.
Right. Might be in the geographical names, yeah. Actually.
Yeah.
Right, which usually means a developer, doesn't it? Does it?
No, it can be resident.
Okay. But does it say then that this policy is about the council naming its own things as well, not just on a request from someone outside? Council resolves public interest, opens or form. Council opens or creates a new public place. Yeah, so it's either our initiative or from outside. So that's covered. So Councillor Pryor, coming back to you, you kind of happy?
Yeah, I'm happy that that the Vinyl Street thing won't happen again. That'd be really good. I mean, again, more so the problem is that there's a one Vinyl Street West and a one Vinyl Street, and they're not that far from each other, and essentially on the same street. The other thing that we do. As well as that is, we've had a habit of calling the cul-de-sac, and the one where I live is a classic, right? Let's say Johnston Road runs north-south, and there's a cul-de-sac running east-west that's still called Johnston Road. Technically it's not... I don't know how the street works, but it doesn't seem to be a logical conclusion to me that that's how it works.
No, when you have a cul-de-sac running off a street like that, you expect it to be a different name. Like yours, for example, I imagine should be Pryor's Sack.
Yeah, or something like that. That would be awesome. I don't know how I live in that then, but the other thing is, say, the continuation of Exmoor Avenue, maybe.
That's a good idea. Any other suggestions? All right, Councillor Byrne.
Thank you. Yes, just furthering on with that, just wanting to make it clear that people can request a name change of existing streets, and just making sure that is clear how they go about it. We also have a street next to Cadell Reserve, where you've got the road, and a lot of people have said that ambulances, fire brigade have a lot of problem with this one as well, because Cadell Street will hit Wangari and then further down the road Cadell Street carries on again, and so we've got very confusing places again, so it's talking about that problem. So with this, are we also able to think about not only just members of the public asking for road changes, but that we do review some of these problems that we know exist there?
I think, looking at that 3.1, a concerned resident could come to us, or a councillor could put it forward, and then the process is set out later. Well, if council agreed, then there would be consultation, there would be a public notice, and so forth. So I think it's covered. Others, Councillor Telfer?
A concerned resident has been very noisy about Darling and Darlington Street in Sturt, because everybody goes in the wrong direction, and they are about two streets apart. So that's quite a concern.
Do we have something there about avoiding? We've got uniqueness. Does that have about avoiding confusion? It does, exactly. Second paragraph. Duplicate road names within a suburb. So maybe that should be duplicate or similar road names.
There's other examples of that, Your Worship, across the city, like in Glengarry, Harding and Hardy, two streets apart.
Yep. That's a good point. Any others? Councillor Westwood?
Yes, just very quickly, 3.2.6 form, the apostrophe actually will confuse kids, and I'm sure it does in their spelling, but I don't think we can do much about it because it is the best way to go, to omit the apostrophe. But I do note that I'm sure kids look at the street names and they'll say, but they don't spell it that way.
Anyway, just between you and me, I thought this was staff's easy way out of not having to figure out where to put the apostrophe, but...
Unfortunately, it does.
With apologies to start.
Unfortunately,
there,
it's the most practical.
It is more practical. You're right, Councillor Blescu.
Malcolm Court at the end of partway through. Is that an issue for people? As far as is that confusion? Obviously, you get mail mixed up, but you know, Malcolm Street, and then you have Malcolm. Crescent or Malcolm Terrace coming off that.
Yeah, so in that 3.2.1, it has got duplicate names and similar sounding names within a suburb or locality will be avoided where possible. So that is the policy, probably to avoid that sort of thing. So if somebody came to us with a new proposal, you wouldn't want to do what you just suggested.
Yep.
But if it's an existing problem, then it's for the affected people to make a noise and come to us. Yeah. If they want to, we consider it.
I just wonder if there's any history as to why they may have done that. Because there would be adjoining, you know, it's adjoining right next to it. So you're kind of looking, Malcolm, oh, that's Malcolm Avenue, and then, oh, okay, Malcolm Crescent's around here or whatever. Yeah.
A bit similar to Councillor Pryor's issue. I mean, I'm not sure that there's any good reason for it. It's my experience is really from developers when they lay out the area.
Yeah.
They've come up with this stuff, and my experience is that councils generally just rubber stamp it. Yeah, it's fine. So it's actually important to have this policy in place and reflective of community wishes. Councillor Pryor?
Yeah, the next one is about what happens after the policy. I mean, if we name a reserve, the Councillor Hutchinson Reserve, then is there a thing we have to go do? I mean, who tells Google?
I refer you to the latter part of the policy, which actually probably gets into some procedural stuff, but it's a good place to put it. Public notice, advising relevant parties, that includes the legal, you know, the state legal people, Australia Post. I suppose, you know, we haven't got Google Maps there as a person to advise.
And that's what everyone uses. Nobody uses the government server, surprisingly.
They might do it. The thing is, what staff are advising is saying, well, they may not listen to Google, may not listen to us, but if it's legal through the Registrar General or Surveyor General, they'll listen to them. You know what I mean? So I presume Google has a way of picking up what the Surveyor General does.
Well, Google knows everything, so yeah, I agree with that.
Well, apart from the fact it's already covered, but yes, I'm sure he would see it as a marketing opportunity. All right, enough discussion. So we got through one policy. Let's have a look at streetscape policy on page 145 onwards.
Thank you.
I believe there should be, on the bottom of page 145, there should be a 3.4, and that is... It's still not there. The point that I would like to introduce would be that this is an opportunity to embed in a policy climate change adaptation initiatives. In other words, streetscaping would help provide tree cover, canopy cover, to help reduce heat sinks within the city. I think we need to spell it out in terms of encouraging a tree canopy where possible. I did say where possible. Can't do it everywhere. Add it on, yeah, it's not one or the other. It's... Such as a tree canopy wherever possible. It's not a principle though, it's a method. The critical point with having such a policy that it should be an imperative in terms of tree selection, because if you don't plant the right trees, you're never going to get the canopy.
What it says at the moment, the use of indigenous plantings where possible to support the, well really to cool the urban environment. So sort of about half of us think that's okay and half want something more.
I'm not even sure whether that is consistent with getting appropriate tree canopy. This is now the discussion. Will indigenous trees provide the canopy that we seek? Because bottle brushes and jacarandas don't quite meet that objective.
Okay, well look, I mean we're sort of divided on it. Let's take, I mean it seems that rather than, well perhaps can I have some staff advice? You've got Mr. Lyons, you got any view on that?
The jacarandas are certainly a valid part of the tree management framework. I can add that.
Okay, that's a bud of a thought. Councillor Westwood, comment. Your comment is to refer to Councillor Pryor. Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, just quickly, on that topic, we have talked about the use of non-Indigenous tree species. Now, this does kind of say that we're going to use Indigenous plantings wherever possible. I'm not sure that's the case.
Well...
Yeah, you can. I mean, we can argue that all night if you want. I mean, you're going to put the streetscape and the treescape. You're going to put the trees on the streetscape. I mean, they're kind of linked up.
Through the chair, I've just consulted with the owner of this policy, Mr. Dixon. I think that there could be a contradiction here. I suggest it would be changed to wherever appropriate.
Which begs the question, is appropriate as accordance to who? In accordance to who? Like who determines when it's appropriate?
It's a policy. It's leaving it general. That's the whole thing.
Sorry,
Dixon. It was your policy. I can never tell the difference between these two.
The option council could choose is you could replace indigenous and you could say appropriate plantings, which then allows to consider different species for, you know, the streetscape you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, absolutely. That I like.
I think it does, and you can actually, there's indigenous and there's indigenous, because a jacaranda is not indigenous. You know, like, indigenous means that the species that grew around here, jacarandas are from Grafton in northern New South Wales. South American originally.
Very briefly, just tossing it in again, you know, a bit repetitive, but it has come to my attention during the various discussions and reading that quite a few non-indigenous trees are actually more effective both in canopy and in less root disturbance of roads and footpaths. So I think we should seriously consider that, using non-indigenous where we think we should. But of course, we should have reasonable note or reasonable consideration of indigenous trees where we can.
Yeah, Councillor, thank you. That's just what we decided to do. Take out the word indigenous and put appropriate. So we went ahead of you there. Councillor Pfeiffer?
Yeah, thank you. Look, we came close to answering this just before. So I agree with the appropriate bit in 3.3. But for now, there's a difference obviously between tree plantings and lower storey plantings as well, obviously. But for tree plantings, why aren't we just referring it straight through to the tree management policy? The framework. Shouldn't it just be in line with the framework, which we spent a ridiculous amount of time developing?
Well,
there's a link at the end of it, but 3.3, if you're talking about trees, should just be in line with the tree management framework. Yeah, the tree management framework.
Through the chair, so this is a broader policy that covers the whole streetscape. Tree planting is one element, and that's where we would refer to our tree management framework in the policies. But this could also cover other plantings, you know, ground cover grasses that are planting as well. So this is probably a more broader policy, and then you've also got your tree management framework.
So should we not just be saying that in relation to the trees, other plantings, yeah, do whatever's appropriate, but trees are in line with the tree management framework? No, leave 3.3 as it is, but just say maybe an extra point in relation to tree plantings. Trees should be planted in accordance with the tree management framework.
Yeah,